Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hi, Stacey.
Hello.
How are you this week?
I think I'm good. I'm a little bit tired because we've actually been doing stuff for the first time in a couple of months. Like, we went to a farm today and did a big farm tour, and then we ran errands, and the boys are so energetic, I forgot that they're crazy to spend time with, unadulterated. So, and I'm standing here at my standing desk wishing that I could just go lay down. But that's a good thing, you know? It's all that vitamin D and energy that I used is giving me good, healthy
melatonin production.
All that stuff.
We should have probably restarted recording slightly earlier. It's okay. You've got, like, easily another hour before you pass out, right?
Okay, I don't have on melatonin glasses. I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. I turned in part two of my book this week.
Nice.
And I know it is so big. When I finished writing it and then I took like 3 days to edit it and make sure that I hadn't missed anything and that, you know, I'm a perfectionist, so I don't want to turn in something that's not the best that I can do. And it was good thing that I edited it, because at one point I hit a section that I just hadn't written for some reason, like forgot. I think it was a section I wasn't quite sure if it was going to go into chapter 8 or chapter 9. So when I hit it in chapter 8, I didn't write it. But by the time I got to chapter 9, I thought I already had. And so it was good. But I'm finding myself, I met that burnt out, don't really want to keep working on, like, part 3 is the cookbook and it's mostly done. It's just a question of, you know, pulling together a few recipes that I've been working on and getting those finalized and typing everything up because everything's in notebooks. And I'm finding myself not really motivated, which is kind of a bad place to be because I'm supposed to be in that, like,
in the creative.
Push.
Yeah.
But I'm just having a really hard time switching my brain from, like, I really got into the science mode and that was finally getting kind of easy to right. And now I'm at the point where, like, switching to cookbook mode is just not happening. So I've basically been trying to give myself some slack and just sort of say, like, it's okay if I, you know, take a couple of days and go to bed early and recharge a little bit. And it's, you know, things are well under control. I've got over 100 recipes are done. And so it's just a question now of sort of rounding out, you know, some of the chapters so that they're sort of more balanced. And there's a few recipes that I just really want to get in the book just because I think they're sort of quality of life type recipes. But yeah, so I'm, that's where I'm at. It's kind of a weird, like, I have this, like, relief of being done with this stress of not being done kind of all wrapped into one just tired fog. That's me. Tired fog.
Well, foggy. Speaking of autoimmune cookbooks.
Mm-hmm.
How about that lead in for you?
That was perfect. Can I introduce our guest this week?
Please do.
So today we have Mickey Trescott. Hi, Mickey.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We're both, I think, really excited to have you. Mickey, for anybody who doesn't know, is the blogger behind autoimmunepaleo.com, and she's actually a personal chef. So, like, her recipes are amazing. And because Mickey's has both Hashimoto's and celiac disease, right, Mickey?
Yeah.
So Mickey follows the autoimmune protocol, and she's actually just come out with an ebook that's called the Autoimmune Paleo Cookbook. And it's 110 autoimmune protocol-friendly recipes. That's the whole gamut. It's quick weeknight meals to, like, something really fancy when you're having company, and everything in between. Amazing desserts that are compliant with the autoimmune protocol for when you really need a treat, you know, snacks, side dishes, you know, one pot meals, the whole works. And Stacey and I have both been promoting your cookbook because we both think it's awesome. So anybody who is intrigued by this fantastic cookbook, we'll definitely put links in the show notes. Mickey is kind of on with us today to sort of talk about autoimmune protocol challenges.
Yeah, I just want to second Mickey's cookbook. And I will say, what I was honestly most impressed by the ebook is the quality of the food photos and the amount of depth that you went into in terms of kind of soup to nuts. It's not just even a cookbook. You know, people can kind of pick it up and...
Soup to nuts?
Is that not a thing that people say?
It's not a thing that I say. What does it mean?
I don't know. Mickey, have you heard that before? Is it an American thing?
Nope. I've never heard that before.
All right. Well, now you got something you can make fun of me on.
It's a Stacey thing. All right. If anybody uses the phrase from soup to nuts, please comment on the show and let us know that it's a normal phrase so Stacey doesn't have to feel so strange.
I wish Matt was here.
I just hadn't heard that phrase, and I thought you were going to tell me that, like, this cool, like, oh, it's an American phrase from, you know, the Civil War, and it means this.
Probably. Yeah. All right. My point is,
sorry,
it has a lot of information in it. And, when Mickey first sent it to me and asked me to give a quote, I kind of hesitate to do that because we get that request often, and then I look at something and it's not the quality or the content that I would necessarily promote to our readers, because I want to be honest and fair, and I don't want to tell people go buy something if I don't actually believe it. And from the moment that I saw the cover shot, I was like, oh, what is that? How is that autoimmune friendly? And how can I, you know, partake? And all of the photography in the ebook was really good and made me feel like if I had had this when I did my first 90 days, I don't think I would have felt nearly as deprived. I think there's some good ideas to kind of get you prepared and get you feeling like it's not as much of a deprivation when you have to take out so many ingredients and spices and things that you're used to. And there were some really innovative and cool ideas, and they were beautifully presented. So sincerely,
also, two different 4-week meal plans with shopping lists.
Yeah. Which is, like, that's just what I meant, like soup to nuts, yeah. But obviously I didn't articulate that the way that I needed to.
Maybe I'm sure lots of people understood exactly what you meant.
For sure. At least one from Pennsylvania. That's probably, my grandmother and grandfather were from Pennsylvania, and they said the weirdest things. And that's probably, it's probably a Pennsylvania-ism. Like, it just makes no sense to anybody except if you're from Pennsylvania. So, like, Hamburgs and everything is like the giant, the Google. I don't know. These are things that happen.
We say the Google.
Cool. Well, kudos to you, Mickey, and welcome to the show. I'm really looking forward to just putting my headset on mute and letting you guys roll with this. You don't need me.
Well, are we going to have to wake you up at some point?
Probably.
Poke you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Except that I can't poke you because you're...
Well, I'm standing, so the likeliness of sleeping is lessened.
That's true. True. Although sleeping standing up, I'm sure is possible.
Hopefully not. All right.
Well, Mickey, is there anything else that I missed that you want to tell people about you? Or?
No, you guys just, like, I'm gushing over here. I mean, yeah, I don't know what to say. Thanks for your kind words, and I'm really glad that both of you guys saw everything that I put out there on it, in it, because I tried really hard. And I can't take credit for the photos. My friend Kyle Johnson shot the whole book, and he did an incredible job and way better than I could have done doing it myself. But I was really lucky to have someone feel so passionately about my project and see my vision and really help me make it a reality. So
I know all about letting friends help you with your vision.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I started talking about what I wanted to do, and this is actually a friend that I would have come over for dinner even when I was sick and I was eating super restricted, and we shared a meal and he was like, I can't believe this is like this super restricted diet that you feel deprived on. Like, this is the best meal that I eat, you know? And he was like, I want to be part of your project. Like, I think it's awesome. So I was really happy. I was really excited by that. And then because he's a pro, I was like, oh great. Now I have to make the book like legit, you know, it can't just be like a Word document that I like mail to all my friends. But, yeah.
So I'm going to totally put you on the spot here, Sarah.
Okay.
It's an autoimmune show this week, obviously. And we talk posteriorly about eating organ meats. And I even did a nose to tail cookbook and ate my way through an animal for several months. But this week, I saw a friend, Amy, of course, because she's the friend that always pushes me to try new things, made a chicken liver mousse. And she swore...
I saw the picture.
She swore that it was so good that her kids ate it all, and it was so amazing, and blah, blah, blah. And so, I was at Mom's, which is an organic grocer, and they had the most beautiful looking pastured chicken livers. And I usually get them for the cat, but I was like, the heck with it, Matt, make me this chicken mousse. And there's heavy cream, of course I got grass fed, and butter, of course I got grass fed, in Julia Child's recipe, which is what we based ours off of. And I would say to people on an autoimmune protocol, normally I would have swapped out coconut milk for the cream and lard or something for the butter. But I told Matt I wanted him to make it the way it was because I haven't been having a problem with dairy fats lately. And I wanted to taste the way that Julia's and Amy's tasted. And I have been eating this amazing mousse all week long with like anticipation, like texting my husband and saying, I don't even care what you're making for dinner because I just want to have the chicken liver mousse and apples
That's
for dinner.
Awesome.
Like, and I'm 100% for serious. That's what I've had for dinner. I actually had it for breakfast this morning. Like, I took it to the movie theater yesterday as my movie theater snack.
I saw that on Facebook.
I am like in love with this chicken liver mousse. And I will tell you that not only am I in love with the way that it tastes, but even though it has heavy cream and butter in it, my face and joints feel better after a week on it. Like, it is, I literally feel like I am putting medicine into my body and feeling better. Because, like, 6 months ago, if I would have even had, like, a tablespoon of something that had heavy cream and butter in it, I feel like I would have had a major problem. So part of me is like, okay, is it the fact that it's these beautiful pastured chicken livers that are counterbalancing what would normally be autoimmune symptoms for me and kind of regulating my system's inflammation that way, or I have been doing a lot of really good progress and healing in terms of gut health and autoimmune progress with drinking bone broth every day and all that kind of stuff, maybe I no longer have the same kind of problems with dairy that I used to have. And again, I want to specify it's dairy fat. Like I can't do lactose, but anyway, I kind of wanted to explore that idea a little bit because it really surprised me. And, we are going to try to come up with a recipe ourselves that also incorporates some stock and doesn't have dairy or has a dairy-free option because it's like my new favorite thing and I want to have it all the time and I want to share it with the world. But it's like a fascinating idea to me. And, you know, I'm curious what you think, if it's like a gut health thing, if you think it's because I'm having this awesome concentrated organ meat as kind of a third of my daily food intake. Cause I'm basically replacing a meal with it, either breakfast or dinner for the past week. So,
I mean, in terms of your skin looking amazing, I mean, liver is, I mean, you already know this. It is the most nutrient dense food available. And it is, especially getting pastured liver, you're getting a really, really vitamin-rich and really, really mineral-rich food. It's also the ratio of amino acids is quite different compared to muscle meats. It's still clearly a complete protein, but it's proportionally quite a lot higher in the amino acids, for example, glycine, compared to muscle meat, that are required for making skin and connective tissue, and that's also would include things like joint tissue. So you're getting a lot of glycine, and then when you throw in the dairy fat, liver already is high in vitamins A, D, and K2, and then you're getting even more of that in the dairy fat, which of course is really, really important for bone health, which I can imagine it's structural health. So it's going to help joints and you know, tissues and connective tissue. I mean, that's really what we're talking about is you know, health of connective tissue through that food. I'm not surprised. I've been eating, I've the last batch of sausage that I made with bison liver and with grass-fed beef heart and with pastured pork from my local farmer. And I've been having that every day, and I've just been feeling amazing. Like it's like the most delicious sausage I've ever made, because bison liver, oh my gosh, new favorite liver. Totally.
What happened to lamb? You throwing it out the window?
I tried bison liver is what happened to lamb liver. So bison liver, okay.
You're right. I can't be one to talk. I'm telling you that I'm like dying for chicken liver mousse.
You've just eaten chicken liver mousse for the last week. So lamb liver I like because it's very, very mild. It has very, very little flavor. And so it just kind of disappears if you put it in something. And in terms of like even just eating it straight, it's very non-offensive. Bison liver is umami. It's like adding fish sauce to something. It's like crazy. It's like MSG in liver form. It's awesome.
You need a t-shirt. Bison liver. MSG.
Liver form. That would be a great t-shirt. It's MSG in liver form. It's, yeah. Now, I haven't tried it straight. I've been mixing it 50-50 with other meats. But it's just, yeah, it has made my, like, regular old sausage recipes just, like, amazing. And I'm not getting tired of it. I'm on, like, week 6 or something of putting liver in my sausage. And... which is my stereotypical breakfast in the morning is, homemade sausage and, usually vegetables and half a grapefruit. And yeah, I'm not tired of it. It's just been, yeah.
So I guess my surprise is not remotely that liver is good. It's the dairy fat.
That you're handling the dairy fat.
Yeah. I don't know quite what to make of that.
Now, are you surprised that you're digesting that because of the lack of gallbladder, or you're surprised that you're handling trace dairy proteins because of the autoimmune disease?
Yes. I've with supplementation and knowing carbs and fats and proteins for myself, I'm not worried about the fat. Definitely the, you know, kind of gluten cross reaction, dairy thing that I thought that I always had going on, I'm assuming is driven by gut permeability. And with having done evidently a really good job healing my gut, I now seemingly don't have that same sensitivity to high quality dairy fat.
Yeah. So there's basically, there's a couple of things. I mean, you're getting raw dairy fat, so you're getting, some of the enzymes that are going to help you digest the sugars and proteins in the fat in there. Although that's not really relevant for the butter, but it is for the cream. And then the other thing is that it sort of depends, you know, we kind of talked about last week about, getting to a point where your cells that are making antibodies against a food are like really, really, still sensitive and they're still there, but the cells that kind of keep everybody in check and sort of say like, hold on guys, like we don't need to get this riled up, aren't. And there's this like in between when you're healing where your reactions are really exaggerated, you know, given that you were also saying that you were glutened not that long ago and you had almost no reaction, I would take it as a sign that your gut health is doing really well.
I'm just really excited about that. Well, that's really exciting. Powerful. Like, I want to take a moment I don't mean to brag because I know, like,
I'm the king of the castle right now.
Everybody's on their own journey, and I don't want anyone to feel like their journey isn't progressing the way they want it to because they're at a different pace. But, you know, I took an effort to say, like, I'm not going to focus on weight loss for a year. I'm going to focus on healing myself. And I went through the most stressful thing in my life, finishing and turning in a book, which is what caused that same time period, you know, a year and a half ago, is what caused this huge problem in my health. So to me, I kind of looked at that milestone and was like, oh, well, all this progress that I think that I've been making, all this hard work that I've been doing, drinking bone broth and blah, 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 is going to go out the window when I, you know, have the stress of that last month of turning in the book. And, despite the fact that I wasn't sleeping as much as I should have been, and despite the fact that, you know, I had all the stress in my life, I really was focusing on doing bone broth, drinking kombucha, and eating the foods that I knew would nourish my body. And I cannot, like, I'm genuinely surprised and shocked that I have healed. I am working on healing and making significant progress. My gut health, like that's just because we talk a lot about you get on the autoimmune protocol, and for a lot of people, you find out that you might have to stay on it for forever for certain foods. Like I still can't eat nightshades. I'm not gonna pretend that I'm completely healed, but I'm like totally surprised that I said that I'm going to work on my health and that I have health. Like, I just
didn't expect it. There's a pretty big difference between how dairy proteins interact with your gut and how proteins and nightshades interact with your gut. Like, right. there's certain things that, you know, if your gut is healthy, like dairy protein, unless you're actually allergic, you should be able to handle. And then there's certain things that it kind of doesn't matter. And that's like nightshades. Like, they're going to get across the gut no matter how healthy your gut is. But still.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to take up so much time talking about that.
No, maybe we should skip Sounds of Sarah now.
Well.
No, we don't have to. I've got a short one.
All right. Well, anyway, I think it's really powerful because we do a lot of autoimmune shows. So there is hope. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I wanted to take a moment to bask in the light.
Well, can I tell you that I found some eggs from a local farmer that are soy-free and wheat-free, and I've been able to eat them without having a reaction?
Just the yolks or the whole eggs?
The whole eggs.
Nice. I went to a farm today to get duck eggs.
Crazy, like I've been like you know, having a few bites of pancakes, or, you know, like I've been going very, very gentle. You know, my daughter left some scrambled eggs on her plate the other morning and I had a couple of bites, and I'm still being really cautious with it because I'm really stressed with the book and I'm trying not to be stupid. But yeah, like normally if I had one bite of something with eggs in it, I would break out and have a stomach ache and it would be a bad scene. But this I seem to be doing really well with.
I had poached eggs today too. I ate the white.
I'm not quite brave enough to just like, yeah, but I should be.
So I'll be able to tell you next week whether or not I had any reaction, but the violent reaction that I had several months ago when I ate an egg white came within like, you know, 30 minutes of eating it. I didn't have any of that. So, yeah, I think it's the chicken livers. I'm going to eat that mousse every day for the rest of my life.
That's awesome.
Okay.
So you're kind of like me. You find a favorite food and you stick with it.
Yeah. And I know everybody thinks we're crazy, but Julia Child. This is Julia Child's recipe, people. This is not sardines. This is not...
Hey, don't bash sardines.
All right. Hey, Mickey, you have anything to add?
Like,
poor Mickey's like, I want to eat eggs.
No, I totally eat eggs, actually. I've had a really similar experience to you, Stacey. Like, I mean, it's been like a month, and I actually just found out that the butcher that I buy sausage from that I thought the ingredients were salt, herbs, and pork, he actually puts buttermilk in them, and I bought them like 3 weeks ago and ate them, and I was fine, and then I went back the next week, and I saw on the sign that it said buttermilk, and I was like, when did you start putting that in there? And he was like, I've always put it in there. And I was like, no, you haven't always put it in there because I have an anaphylactic reaction to dairy. And we kind of had a little fight. And he was like, well, my dairy is raw and grass-fed, and I make it all at my own dairy, and some people aren't allergic to it. And I was kind of like, don't give me that spiel. Like, I know all that, but that can't apply to me, you know? I haven't since. I'm too scared to eat the sausages, but, you know, same deal. I guess my gut has healed to the point where maybe I can tolerate a little dairy, and I've been eating a little egg here and there and crossing my fingers.
So exciting.
Yeah, totally. There's totally hope. And I thought that I would be on the autoimmune protocol forever. You know, I kept trying foods and nothing would work out besides like a tiny quantity of nuts or seeds. And I was just kind of like, well, this is it. But we'll see how it goes. I'm excited. Sounds like you guys are excited too.
Yeah. I'm going to forever be excited about being able to eat nutrient-dense foods. I mean, it's dairy fat and eggs that we're talking about. Most people take that for granted.
Well, and really, out of all the foods that are paleo foods that are omitted on the autoimmune protocol, those are the ones that really have like some nutrients to offer. Like, I think, you know, I don't think nuts have enough anti-nutrients in them that, you know, and they're high enough in omega-6 that I don't think they kind of have that sort of nutrient value the way, you know, pastured egg yolks and grass-fed dairy fat have. So it's nice to be able to add back in those sort of nutrient-dense foods.
It's too bad nightshades are in everything.
They are. They're
so expensive. Because that one, for convenience, I wish that it... I just did not react like crazy to them because it makes eating out impossible. Going over to someone else's house for dinner impossible. It's just
an embarrassment at a restaurant because I'm like, are you sure there's no flour? Are you sure there's no tomato paste? Are you sure this? Are you sure that? Like, yeah, paprika. I've added
paprika.
Back.
I mean, if it has a label, it has nightshades in it because like spices almost always means paprika.
Totally.
We should probably definitely have a show.
Do a show?
At least this is all on topic.
It's true. Not like last week.
Wah, wah.
Science with Sarah time?
Definitely.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. So today for Science with Sarah, I actually wanted to answer a very, probably the most frequently asked question when it comes to the autoimmune protocol. And it's one of the places where I think people get sort of the wrong idea about what's allowed and what's not allowed. And I'm using air quotes right now. I know people can't see that. But the question is fruit allowed on the autoimmune protocol? And I think the reason why this is confusing for people is because there's all of these sort of extra levels when dealing with food sensitivities, when the autoimmune protocol isn't quite working for people. And one of those areas is FODMAPs, which of course a lot of fruit are high FODMAP. And there's this sort of focus on blood sugar regulation. So people get, you know, assume that in order to regulate your blood sugar, that means no fruit. But I just want to really emphasize that fruit is absolutely allowed on the autoimmune protocol. There are no restrictions on types of fruit that you can eat. Fruit, in fact, is a very, you know, vitamin and mineral rich food. It has fiber and it does have more sugar than vegetables. But when you look at the glycemic load of fruit, which is a measure of the glycemic index that's sort of corrected for how carbohydrate dense that food is, all fruits are either low or moderate glycemic index, with the obvious exception of dried fruit, which is a very high glycemic index. I said glycemic index. I meant glycemic load, a very high glycemic load food. So what that means is if you are sticking to low and moderate glycemic load foods, you have to eat a whole heck of a lot to actually have high blood sugar, unless you're diabetic. And then, of course, it needs to be a little bit more measured because you're more sensitive to high blood sugar from your foods. But really, the concern with fruit is making sure that your blood sugar is well regulated. If you're having a piece of fruit with a meal, it's going to be well regulated. And then the other concern with eating fruit is not to overconsume fructose. So I think we've talked before, I don't know, Stacey, maybe we haven't talked about how fructose is metabolized differently than glucose in the body. So glucose can be very, very readily changed into fuel for all of your cells. It's very, very quickly converted into adenosine triphosphate, which is this energy currency in the cell. It is basically what the machinery inside your cells use for energy. Fructose ends up being metabolized and after glycogen stores are repleted, so this sort of applies to excess fructose in the diet, it basically becomes an unregulated source for triglyceride production. So what ends up happening when you consume a lot of fructose is you end up with high blood triglycerides, which we do know is a risk factor for obesity, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, diabetes. I guess those things are part of metabolic syndrome. So there's a lot of people who really blame a lot of the increase in chronic disease, especially those ones that I just mentioned, obesity, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, metabolic syndrome. They actually blame it on the very dramatic increase in fructose consumption that humans have seen over the last 50 or 60 years. For most of human history, we have consumed between 15 and 20 milligrams of fructose, not milligrams, grams. I'm tired.
You said brain fog. You said.
I did. Fair warning. Between 15 and 20 grams of fructose a day, mostly from fruit. And now the typical Western diet consumes, I mean, people are consuming like 100 grams a day. When you look at a graph of like increase in cardiovascular disease, increase in obesity, and increase in fructose intake, the lines like overlap. Like it's pretty crazy. Now, in a paleo diet, we don't tend to consume all that much fructose. 15 to 20 grams a day, depending on what kind of fruit you're choosing to eat, is anywhere between, say, 2 pieces of fruit and 6 pieces of fruit. Like, I mean, you could have like 6 cups of strawberries and be within that 15 to 20 grams of fructose a day. So for my recommendations with all the research that I've done for the book basically said, make sure your blood sugar levels are well regulated. If you're not sure, get a glucometer. And make sure that your fructose is somewhere between 10 and 20 grams a day. You actually do need some fructose. It actually, having some actually helps with the conversion of glucose to glycogen. So it actually can help better regulate the amount of glucose in your blood and help improve insulin sensitivity. So having some is actually really good. And there's other reasons why being, over avoiding fruit can be an issue. It can be really strenuous on the thyroid if you're not actually stimulating some insulin production, because the thyroid conversion of T4 to T3 is actually requires insulin. It's facilitated by insulin. So, yes, fruit is allowed.
Can I just
try not to go crazy?
Make a point, because I wrote a post, what will be last week, to people about needing to have a moderate carb intake. And what you just said, I think, is kind of really important to tie that thought together. You know, when you're talking about proper thyroid function, in order to have that T3, T4 conversion, you have to have an insulin response. You can get an insulin response from protein, but if you're eating a really high fat, low carb, moderate protein diet, a lot of people, that's just not enough for that thyroid conversion, myself included, and a lot of women. So I just want to kind of tie that together as a kind of additional thought to what you're talking about, because I feel like it fits in a little bit.
Yeah. Both very high carbohydrate diets and very low carbohydrate diets are very strenuous on the thyroid. So, when I spent like hundreds of hours researching, where my book was going to fall in terms of carbohydrate intake and what my recommendations were going to be in terms of fruit and starchy vegetables. And I basically came with, I don't recommend a ketogenic diet approach for people with autoimmune disease. If you're healthy and that's something that you want to do, I mean, I think there's other research to show that with autoimmune disease. The only research that there is that explores it in autoimmune disease shows that it makes it worse. So that's not something that I would recommend, which would be like what you were explaining, sort of high fat, low carb, moderate protein. Clearly having high blood sugars is pro-inflammatory and causes all kinds of issues, but being too low can, especially given how many autoimmune diseases end up having, subclinical hypothyroidism as part of the overall picture. They're not necessarily symptoms of the disease, but, a not optimally functioning thyroid seems to go along with autoimmune disease really frequently. And so I think going too low carb can be an issue. So the end result is, yes, fruit, good. As long as blood sugars are regulated and you're not getting way too much fructose. So you kind of have to be aware of which fruits are higher fructose fruits and which fruits are lower fructose fruits. But
again, with this, revealing my thoughts on how to actually be healthy and regulate my carbs, I reintroduced dates without guilt, right? Like, dates used to be my dessert and it was like this big thing, like, oh, I'm a bad person if I eat dates. And it's so ridiculous. It's dates. It's high in fiber and vitamins and minerals, and there's nothing you feel bad about. And I've had, coconut date rolls, which is just dates and coconut, a couple of times a day, like 3 to 4 times a week as my snack sometimes. And I'm fine. I told you, I am feeling really great lately. And so, I like fruit. I know we both did a 21-day sugar detox and we had good, kind of results from that. But I also think most of that is because we were cutting out the non-fruit related sweets that were in our life. And
that
so
was it for me.
Yeah. Like, when we're talking
when
about,
I started going back to more fruit, I did just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So, and I think, honestly, incorporating fruit on a regular basis encourages me to eat the other sweet stuff less. Because I'm like, well, I could have this thing that I want that's a paleo treat, or I could just have these coconut date rolls and not feel bad about it. I'm going to choose the coconut date rolls, you know? So, I think it's what, you know, everybody has to find what works for them. But I will say, you know, when it comes to gut health and autoimmune and those sort of things, I haven't had any problems. In fact, I feel like I do better when I am, you know, doing a moderate amount of carbohydrates, which come 95% from starchy vegetables and fruits for me. So I would wholeheartedly agree.
Sweet.
Nice. Oh. Although tomatoes are technically a fruit, and that's, we're not approving that. Sorry, friends.
No, but zucchini and cucumber are, and pumpkin. So
who knew? These crazy, crazy farmers with their rules. Mickey?
Yeah?
You eat fruit? I wanted to just sing right there. Hey, Mickey. Sorry.
That's going to happen. You know, I have actually tried a ketogenic diet, and I did not feel that great. So I would definitely back up what you found, Sarah. I think it's a little too intense, and it definitely made my thyroid symptoms come back, except that it really helped my SIBO, which I'm sure is a topic for another time.
Mm-hmm.
But I do really well energy-wise and just quality of life-wise eating some fruit. You know, I feel really deprived when I say, I can't eat fruit because it has too much sugar. And then, I don't know, you lose that fun flavor. And it's easy, you know, and there's not a lot of easy things on the autoimmune protocol. So I would definitely back up, you know, including some fruit, but really not going crazy. And I don't know. I think that's great.
Should we answer some questions now?
I just want to be clear also that we're not on the 50 bananas a day diet.
No, I think it was pretty clear.
Moving along.
Dose. Yeah.
Cool.
20 grams. Moving along. Questions? Anyone? Questions?
I'm good.
We're moving along.
Okay.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So I'm actually going to do the questions this week, which should make everyone both frightened and excited at how I might pronounce people's names or butcher what state they're from for my lack of geography knowledge. We have a multi-part question from Michelle, and I will do my best. I think maybe English isn't Michelle's first language, so between me reading it and her awesome job at coming up with some of these technical English terms, one of us is going to make this a little punchy. So Michelle says that she developed guttate, is that correct?
Yeah, that's
guttate
right.
Psoriasis last March. And sorry that if we're getting to your question late, Michelle. And she's had mild psoriasis since 19 years old. She's in her early 40s. Today, she's 90% clear from following a gluten-free diet, but she noticed she itches if she eats gluten-free from boxed foods. She realizes that eating raw, fresh, and no dried food makes her skin feel better quicker, which is why she's leading towards your website. I guess that's yours, Sarah. And making sense to stick to a paleo diet in her life. So I guess her question is, question number one. I see we've broken it out into four separate questions here. See? Sarah does a much better job of this. So her first question is, for psoriasis, it says no eggs, especially egg whites, and she wants to know why. Can she still have egg yolk to make a scramble? Can she use egg yolk in desserts? And then the book recipe sounds like it uses the whole eggs. I'm not sure
what book she's talking about.
So we can just address the egg thing, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, really quickly, we can put a link in the show notes to my post on why eggs are omitted on the autoimmune protocol. But it's because the egg white contains a protein called lysozyme, which does two things. One, it's very, very good at crossing the gut barrier, and we don't really understand why, but it gets across very, very efficiently, and we can measure it in the blood very, very quickly after somebody eats lysozyme. And the other thing it does is it binds to other proteins, and because its function in the egg is as an antimicrobial, it really binds really, really strongly to bacterial proteins. So one of the things that it will bind to as it's going through the gut is it'll bind to, you know, gram-negative cell bacteria cell wall proteins like endotoxin. And it will form this complex with, you know, or food proteins, for whatever it sees. And then it makes this complex, so kind of like a little monster molecule with all of these random things it sees in the gut. And then it brings them across. So it's kind of like this carrier molecule that will help bring things across the gut that shouldn't be. And in the case of autoimmune disease, you're already dealing with a leaky gut and you're already dealing with an overactivated immune system. So having this sort of extra, you know, transporter to bring stuff that's supposed to stay inside the gut into the body is not helpful. But that effect, and this is why I think we've sort of talked about being able to handle eggs after being on the autoimmune protocol for a long time, that effect is relatively small. It's why Professor Cordain recommended limiting to 6 eggs a week in the paleo diet. And he actually sort of backed off that a little bit by the time he published the Paleo Answer. It's because in healthy people, it's a small enough effect that it's probably not going to be a problem with your health. But people with autoimmune disease are more sensitive. We have much more sensitive immune systems to stimuli, and we have typically much more leaky gut barriers. So that's why. Egg yolk we've talked about. It's just it's a common food allergy. So that's why it's typically omitted initially, but it's one of the first foods that I would recommend reintroducing. Do you know, Mickey, what book she might be talking about?
I don't know. Do I know?
I mean, paleo books in general, like let's say Practical Paleo, although it has an autoimmune section, still has recipes that aren't necessarily only autoimmune. So
yeah.
If she's only been gluten-free, and we have talked about this before, if she's only been gluten-free, despite the fact that your site has specific information or recommendations for psoriasis in general, moving from just gluten-free to autoimmune paleo can be really overwhelming, and she might want to try 30 to 90 days of just a paleo diet to see what and how that helps her before moving to an autoimmune diet. I mean, if she wants to jump in and do the best that she can and go autoimmune, like more power to her. But at the same time, I believe that it's more likely that someone would get overwhelmed with trying to do autoimmune paleo and give up on everything rather than succeeding on just paleo and then being excited by the results and then being willing to try autoimmune. So
yeah, I think it's, there's a fine balance because I think the way that some people implement paleo initially, they can actually end up seeing flares in their autoimmune disease. And I think that gets very, very frustrating for people, and they don't necessarily then want to go a level deeper.
You mean if they put eggs and tomatoes on everything?
Right, which is what I did when I first, you know, and 8 gallons of nuts. I mean, that's what I did when I first transitioned to paleo. I ate 3 times as many eggs and about 10 times as many nightshades. And even though I had great success with, you know, my gut health, my autoimmune disease was flaring. And so that's why I had to understand what was going on in my body. But I think there's a formula that every person needs to figure out for themselves of how difficult it's going to be to jump into the autoimmune protocol versus if they're just going to have a much easier time taking it step by step versus how sick they are versus, you know, it's the sort of their personality. I mean, we talk about this with transition to paleo all the time. Like if you're the kind of personality who has a better chance of sticking with something by doing small changes, or the type of personality who has a better, you know, a better chance of sticking with something by just ripping off the Band-Aid, like, you need to know that about yourself. And that the same goes for the autoimmune protocol. Is it better to do it in stages for who you are, or is it better to jump in? I did standard paleo before I did autoimmune protocol, and I'm glad I did it that way. I think it would have been too overwhelming for me to jump into the autoimmune protocol. But that's my
I probably would have failed.
You would,
because when when I started paleo, like the first couple of weeks, I remember I still went to McDonald's and like took the outer layer of the breading off of a chicken nugget and thought that I was being paleo. And that's why I just think everybody, it's a journey and it's steps, and you make the best choices that you can. And as I went further along, I was like, oh, I don't want to.
Well, and the resources are changing very, very quickly.
That's true.
For the
yeah. I mean, 3 years ago, it wasn't what it is now. So, yeah. But if someone had, you know, told me absolutely nothing on this list. In fact, I think I've told this story before where I was on a forum and the tagline of somebody on a message board is probably Paleo Hacks or something. Or something, Reddit Paleo, one of those extreme sites. Mm-hmm. And the tagline of someone's thing was, if you're eating nuts, peppers, tomatoes, and they listed like all of the autoimmune foods, then you're not really paleo! Exclamation point. And wow. I remember like shutting down the thing and crying and being like, I can't figure it out. I don't even know how to do this right. You know, so yeah, that's what I have to say about that. I feel better about it now. And hopefully we're providing, that's part of why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I'm sure you're doing what you're doing. And Mickey's doing what she's doing, because we're trying not to ever make someone feel like they need to cry and have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right. I forgot. It's my turn to read questions, so I need to stop talking. Her question number two. Can she take raw hemp powder or wheatgrass juice powder in her green smoothie drink? She read somewhere on the website, and it says, caution, chlorella, because of stimulating the immune system. So she wants to know if she should avoid wheatgrass juice, and what about hemp?
Yeah, she should avoid wheatgrass juice and hemp seed and algae powders, both chlorella and spirulina. Yes.
Okay. So do you want to, I mean, not in a detail, but like, for example, hemp is a seed and seeds are out in autoimmune. Do you want to like,
yeah. Okay. So you covered hemp for me. Thanks. with wheat, it's because, some of the lectins in wheat, especially wheat germ agglutinin, actually, this isn't so much a gluten issue as wheat germ agglutinin, which wheat germ agglutinin is a very, very toxic protein. And it's been investigated. There was a sort of push to have it used as an adjuvant in certain medications. And there was this huge pushback from the scientific community, basically saying it's like it's too toxic to use. We can't do that. It's a pretty nasty little protein. It's very, very good at crossing the gut barrier. Very, very good at increasing intestinal permeability, opening up the junctions between cells. And it is concentrated in the seed and the sprout. So wheatgrass is essentially the sprout. So it's, it isn't until wheatgrass is something like, the number's not coming to me exactly, but it's like 5 to 7 days old. It's quite a number of days before the amount of wheat germ agglutinin is sort of negligible. And when you're typically consuming wheatgrass, the sprout is much younger than that. So unless you're growing it yourself and letting it grow a week before you mow it and put it into your smoothies, it's going to have a substantial amount of wheat germ agglutinin. Chlorella is a blue-green algae that grows in lakes and is used as a supplement, and it's very commonly found in sort of these green juices, green smoothies, green super greens. It's kind of neat because it actually has DHA, the long chain omega-3 fatty acid that's so important for brain function. But it also has proteins in its cell wall that are basically the same types of proteins that are in the cell wall of gram-negative bacteria like E. coli, endotoxin, which I think I actually already said that word this podcast, and that stimulates the immune system and can be a real problem if you have a leaky gut. So if your gut's fine and you don't have endotoxin leaking across, then it's a fine supplement. But if you have a leaky gut, then you're basically adding to the toxins that are leaking into your body. Spirulina has been shown, they've both actually been shown to stimulate the immune system in clinical trials. With spirulina, it's not related to endotoxin. They don't really know what it is. But when people take it, they have this sort of skewed stimulation of one part of the adaptive immune system that happens in autoimmune disease. So it's not a good supplement for us.
Cool. Mickey, anything to add?
Just that chlorella stimulates TH1. So going off what Sarah said, if you have a TH1 dominant condition, it can really cause it to flare up and make it worse. So yeah,
spirulina
avoid.
Can too.
Yeah, I didn't know that one.
Well, they both just to get even more geeky here. They both inhibit regulatory T cell function. So it's not just that they stimulate TH1; it's that
double whammy.
Yeah, so. Not for us.
You guys are so geeky. It's cute. All right. Number three. She's lost 10 pounds being upset about her psoriasis. She doesn't have weight issues. She's always been thin. She's currently 124 and 5'8". She worries that if she's on a paleo diet, she'll lose more weight. She wants to gain a little, or at least stay her current weight, and she feels like she's always hungry just to eat all day, just to keep the same weight. What can she take? If only I could have this problem. No. So it's not, I mean, I shouldn't joke.
It's often one extreme or the other.
Yes. Sorry, I shouldn't joke. That's just as much of a problem as not being able to lose weight.
So, being underweight with autoimmune disease is usually due to malnutrition. So it's usually a sign of severe gut damage. So, you know, doing all of the things that we always talk about, you know, for healing the gut. And that's not just, you know, I'm going to say, you know, bone broth and organ meat and fish and all of those things, but it also means sleep, and it also means stress management. It also means spending time outside, doing all of those things to help heal the gut, taking digestive support supplements, which we've talked about many times on the show before, can really help you it helps you digest your food so you can get more out of those micronutrients, or get more micronutrients out of the foods you're actually absorbing what your body needs. Working with a doctor to get tested for micronutrient deficiencies may be helpful, and do some targeted supplementation. Targeted supplementation, by the way, can mean eating foods rich in the mineral or vitamin that you're deficient in. It doesn't have to mean pills. It can still mean whole food sources, which I always recommend if that's an option. And then, you know, making sure that when you eat, you're eating nutrient-dense foods, you're eating animal-based foods and plant-based foods. So you're getting protein, carbohydrates, and good quality fats. Make sure that you're getting all of those things every time you eat. You know, generally, I still recommend spacing out your meals a little bit, at least going at least 3 hours between eating instead of snacking, just because that's way better for resolving inflammation. So eating a bigger meal less frequently is generally helpful from an inflammation standpoint. That can be really hard if you've got a really damaged gut. It can be really hard to digest bigger meals. So I would try and find some sort of happy medium while you're healing of, you know, maybe eating a meal about every 3 hours. Once your gut is healed, it can be more like every 4 or 5 or 6. But sleep. Did I say sleep? I said sleep, right? Sleep?
I heard sunlight, but yes, sleep too.
Sleep, sunlight, manage stress. And good quality food with some digestive support supplements.
Cool. Okay. Last question from Michelle.
Second to last.
Is it not? Oh, I see that. If the last one isn't numbered, people, it's not that I have a reading problem. All right. So the question number four, she takes a tablespoon of cod liver oil, a 20 billion probiotic, and 2000 IU of vitamin D3. She says her D levels were 37. She was told from a neuropath doctor for autoimmune system that they should or must be 60 to 70. Should she increase her vitamin D3?
Yes. I agree completely. I would probably expand the range and say anywhere between 50 and 80, but 60 to 70 is a really good target. And so if eating vitamin D-rich foods like pastured or grass-fed meat, wild caught fish, wild mushrooms is a challenge for some reason. I mean, that's a great way to get your vitamin D is by eating foods rich in vitamin D, and spending more time out in the sun, of course, is great for regulating circadian rhythms and producing vitamin D. Those would be my first two choices, but yes, I mean, she will probably notice a big improvement in her psoriasis if she can get her vitamin D up into that normal range. So increasing her supplement would be absolutely appropriate, but I would recommend getting retested frequently because you don't want to overshoot. So vitamin D, just like every vitamin and every mineral, your body works optimally within a certain range. So too low is a problem, and we often hear about the problems of being too low in things. We don't always hear about the problems of being too high in things. So being, you know, too high in vitamin D can cause a whole pile of issues, and it can cause a pile of like connective tissue problems, which of course is not great when you have a skin disease. So, you know, yes, she should increase her vitamin D, but she should also get tested frequently to make sure that she's getting it into the right range and not overshooting.
And we've talked before about the cholesterol function and getting your proper fats. And it's something we haven't really talked about on the show, but when you move from a standard diet or even just a gluten-free diet to a paleo diet, one of the focuses is eating good quality fats, coconut oil, lard, gosh, I don't even know what people cook with other than that anymore, because that's what we use.
Bacon fat,
tallow, all those kinds of things.
Red palm oil is a nice one.
Yeah, and on salads, you know, or in, well, you wouldn't be doing mayonnaise, but in those, you're talking about avocado oil, macadamia oil, olive oil, things that you're not heating. So when you move from standard fats to non-inflammatory, natural, healthy fats for your body, oftentimes what I found personally is that as a very fair-skinned person, when I removed specifically grains, sugar, and then added in healthy fats, my body's ability to naturally regulate sunlight increased dramatically to the point where I couldn't even be out for 5 minutes before I'd get a sunburn. And now I can go out for several hours. And in, you know, heavy heat in the summertime at noon or something, I'd probably get a little pink. But for the most part, I don't have any problem at all and don't really need to put on sunblock unless I'm going out to, let's say, the beach for all day or something like that.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah. But what I think is that when you get to that healthy point in your body, the vitamin D is then being processed more effectively. So that should help her, hopefully, to absorb the natural vitamin D's in the food that she's eating, hopefully, you know, pastured egg yolk and those sort of things, rather than having to take so much supplementation. So not only do you not want to overregulate, but as your body gets used to it, you might actually absorb more naturally, and then you would need to take less of a supplement. So those are all things I would say to consider. Did I get that totally wrong?
No, you got that right. Vitamin D is actually recycled in the body. So it's actually secreted in the bile into the gastrointestinal tract, and then it's reabsorbed with fat-soluble vitamins, cholesterol, and other lipids back into the body, and then it's recycled. So when you're not digesting fats very well, if your gut is but gut barrier is really badly damaged, you end up losing vitamin D that should be reabsorbed and recycled, and instead it's passed through. So that kind of is sort of goes part and parcel with, you know, having enough cholesterol that your body can actually make it, and being able to, you know, have the nutrients that function, the conversion of it from its pro-hormone form to its active form, and all of those other things. Yes.
Cool. So her actual last question is, do you have a psoriasis cookbook? She was hoping you might create one because it's difficult to find a specific cookbook.
I don't have to create one because Mickey did.
Woo-hoo. Well, and yes. I would just clarify, though, that it's not a psoriasis cookbook, that because psoriasis is autoimmune, any autoimmune cookbook or recipes would be specific, right?
Totally. And Stacey's Pinterest.
Yes, I have a Pinterest board. I actually also have a tag on my website for all of my autoimmune condition recipes, too, so they can be filtered out. And I think, Sarah, you do the same thing.
I have a Pinterest board for autoimmune protocol recipes, and I have a whole menu that's just the autoimmune protocol recipes on my site.
So, Sarah will have a cookbook in print form in mm-hmm. fall, yeah. And Mickey has an ebook that you can get today, and both would be great for your needs.
And also, I should say there's not going to be very much overlap, but in terms of types of recipes between my book and Mickey's book, it was one of the things when you first sent me your book, I mean, one of the things I was really nervous about is, you know, at the time, I think I was 90 some odd recipes into the recipes for my book. And I was a little nervous, like, what happens if Mickey's got all the same recipes that I have? Like, what am I, like, I don't have time to reinvent a whole pile of different recipes. And what was really cool is there's probably only two or three where I have something that's sort of like a similar version, but it's not the same as what you have. And everything else is such a neat complement. Like, it's still the type of food that appeals to my palate. It's still the type of food that appeals to the way I like to cook, but it's so different from the ideas that I've come up with that for anybody who has been, you know, thinking about whether or not to get Mickey's book and whether or not to wait for my book, I'm trying to say get both, because you're going to end up with a good resource in terms of recipes for both books. So you'll end up with just double the number of great recipes that you can enjoy when you have both books.
That's awesome. That's so exciting. That over 200 recipes. I mean, rad.
Yeah, totally. It'll be close. Rad. You've got 110, and I mm-hmm. at this point I think I'm going to end up with around 120, although I'm not entirely sure, but 230 recipes between our two books.
Add Stacey's Pinterest and the stuff on our websites. I mean, no one's going to have any reason to complain.
It's true.
You know what I mean? That's awesome.
People will find a reason to complain. If there's one thing I know about people on the internet, it's that they will find a reason. But that's okay, because we have so many awesome people. We balance it out. All right, moving on. Deborah from Devon in the UK. Yeah?
Yeah.
Let's hope. She says her daughter is 18 and very, very sick with a multitude of illnesses. Her autoimmune system appears to be reacting like autoimmune would, even if she hasn't been diagnosed fully yet. She can't swallow well and wants to do the autoimmune protocol. Can you please help with some ideas? No fruit or cocoa or nuts or fermented products on top of paleo because of blood test results from her natural hospital. Thank you so much.
So, Mickey, I actually think this is where you should jump in first.
Being all right.
So experienced with the autoimmune protocol and being a chef, I kind of thought you would have lots of good ideas for liquidy meals.
Totally. Well, I would just do tons of bone broth. Like, honestly, if the only thing you can have is liquid and you have an autoimmune disease, it's kind of makes sense. That's the most nourishing foundation to start with. And then I would make really long, slow braises, chicken, like really well-cooked meats, and throw it in a blender of Vitamix with some bone broth and, you know, meat smoothie. It doesn't really sound that good, but for someone who can't eat solid food, I mean, that's got to be completely life-giving to them. So I would add to that, maybe sneak in like some pate or some liver. You could dissolve it in some broth, puree vegetables like sweet potatoes and other root veggies and greens. And, yeah, I would definitely go there with a savory, make sure she gets enough protein. And then, if she is making progress, the first thing she could add is egg yolks. As long as they're carefully separated, and blend that up. But yeah, do you guys have any other ideas?
Well, the only thing that I was thinking is, I mean, my only experience with people with difficulty swallowing is my grandparents after their strokes. And, and I don't know if that the mechanism is the same for this girl or not, but I recall that they actually had a harder time swallowing thin liquids compared to thick. And so there was this sort of optimal thickness of sort of milkshakey kind of thickness that would be – it's so terrible that the only thing I could come up with as an analogy for how thick it was a milkshake. I apologize. I already mentioned brain fog, but that thicker things were actually easier to swallow. So we were doing a lot of like pureed soups with them, and then we had this like horrible starch called thicket that we added to everything. And I think it was corn based. I wouldn't recommend going and getting that. But that if something like broth is too thin, you could thicken it with. I mean, I think ideally with vegetables, with pureed vegetables would be the most nutrient dense thing to thicken with. But you could also use like arrowroot powder is a good thickener. I've used kuzu starch, which is a very – also arrowroot and kuzu starch are very, very digestible starches. And it also works very well as a thickener. And then, yeah, I like the idea of throwing things in a blender. I would do a lot of like soups and stews. Things that sort of combine protein and vegetables and broth. And you could even, you know, throw in a, if it's not a really fatty cut of meat or something like that, you could even, you know, melt in a spoon of pastured lard. I think that would be good. Or coconut oil or something to sort of increase the fat content, because that's going to be important too.
I'm good with all that. I really like that you said adding in lard. I mean,
I've become really fond of lard lately, I have to admit.
As well you should be, because you're friends with the person who wrote the book on it. So when we wrote the book, we genuinely didn't know how we were going to come up with that many recipes with lard, basically. And I became so into... making vegetables with lard that I basically could do a whole book on that. Like, we have quite a few purees that they literally go from kind of being ho-hum to being crazy amazing when you just add some pastured rendered lard to them. You can also add like the broth is really important. You can add some cooked, liver, even just like one or two chicken livers if you pan fry them, in lard with onions, like caramelized onions and some garlic, and then you puree that into like a, you know, thick paste kind of thing, and then add in some steamed vegetables or roasted vegetables or whatever, and add in broth and lard. It's amazing. So I know that that's probably not what she wants to eat, but it would help her and would be delicious if she could be accepting of it. But I think probably, Sarah, you were more on with the kind of thicker stuff. Because I know both of my grandfathers have difficulty swallowing, and it's more of like a puree kind of thing that they like rather than a liquid thing.
Yeah. We had to actually like thicken water in order to make it swallowable.
Yeah. So I think stews would definitely be my idea, just because it's kind of a normal food and you can get
a full spectrum. And you can put the entire rainbow of vegetables in there. You can be putting kale and spinach in your stew and blending it up and, you know, really making sure that you're getting a big variety of
and not even needing to blend, though. I mean, if you cook a proper stew and if you Dutch oven or crock pot.
Enough that
Our carrots, when they're done, are very soft. And that's personally how I like them, so. Okay, we've had a long show, so let's do this last question. You guys ready?
Yep. Ready.
Karen from Texas has a question about food reintroductions. Hi, ladies. I have two quick questions. I have Hashimoto's and have been following an autoimmune protocol for a few months now and haven't seen any improvements. I was hoping to gain more energy and drop some weight. I'm ready to reintroduce some foods, but I'm not sure what to look for as far as negative reactions to the foods. It's not like I would break out in a skin rash when I eat eggs or get acne with cheese. Since my symptoms of Hashimoto's are not immediate, slow weight gain, slow increases in lethargy, hair slowly falling out, etc., what's the best way to tell if I can add back in some of my favorite foods like chocolate, coffee, and butter? Also, since I'm avoiding dairy, is the fermented cod liver oil, butter oil blend okay to take? Or should I take fermented cod liver oil without the butter? Thanks.
Yeah, if you're not seeing improvements yet, I think it's a little bit early to start food reintroductions, especially chocolate and coffee. I mean, we've already talked about grass-fed, dairy fat, and egg yolks being really nutrient-dense foods, and those I feel a little bit more confident saying that you could play with adding those back in. But I would really suggest tinkering a little bit more. We've already talked about going too low carb being hard on the thyroid. So maybe increasing carbohydrate intake a little bit, making sure that you're getting lots and lots of vegetables, making sure you're getting organ meat, making sure that you're getting fish, making sure that you're sourcing the highest quality, most nutrient dense foods that you can. I mean, I kind of don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I could list off a bunch of symptoms to look for if you think that might be helpful. Does anyone think that might be helpful?
I think so. Because I think people, if she hasn't, this is what I would say. You don't know what your reactions are going to be until you do it. So she might think that she's not going to break out into a skin rash or get acne, but when she reintroduces it, she might, because she might not have ever experienced it out of her system long enough for them to put it back in and see what a reaction would be. And I think some other symptoms for you to help her with and help other people look for would be helpful.
Okay. So straight out of my book, I'm reading it. Any symptoms of your disease returning or worsening, which I think she's already has on her radar. Any gastrointestinal symptoms, tummy ache, changes in bowel habits, so increased or decreased stool frequency, for example, or stool size, for example, heartburn, nausea, constipation, diarrhea, gas, bloating, undigested or partially digested food particles in the stool, reduced energy or fatigue, energy dips in the afternoon, especially if that's not something that you're used to. That also goes with that is feeling more energetic in the evening when you're supposed to be feeling tired. Sugar cravings, fat cravings, desire for caffeine, actually any strong food cravings, so even like pica, like mineral cravings, trouble sleeping, either falling asleep, staying asleep, not feeling rested in the morning, having to pee in the middle of the night. I think once a night kind of falls under the like normal-ish level, but twice a night probably shouldn't be happening. Headaches, that means anything from a mild little tiny niggling headache to a full-blown migraine. Dizziness or feeling lightheaded. Any kind of increase in mucus production, so phlegm, runny nose, postnasal drip, coughing, even the increased need to clear your throat, itchy eyes, itchy mouth, sneezing, any kind of swelling anywhere, swollen ankles, swollen tongue, swollen ears, any kind of aches and pains. That means muscle, joint, or tendon and ligament. So things like carpal tunnel syndrome getting active can be a sign. Any kind of changes to skin, so that could be something really overt like hives and rashes, but it could be something that you're not looking for as much, like acne, dry skin, little tiny pink bumps or spots, dry hair or brittle fingernails, and then mood issues. So feeling low or depressed, or feeling like you're not as in control of your emotions, feeling like you have a reduced ability to handle stressful situations, feeling like you have more anxiety. Any of those things, any one of those things can be a reaction to a food. And so it's really important to introduce food slowly, one at a time, give a few days in between when you introduce them. And if you're not sure, don't continue eating it and move on and then try it again in a few weeks. Because a lot of these things we can very easily shake off and say, oh, yeah, I know I feel a little bit tired up today, but I did go to bed extra late last night. Well, if you're going to bed extra late, that's not a day that you should be reintroducing a food. So if there's any gray and there's any room for telling yourself that it's okay when it really isn't, it's really, really important to be really critical. And if you're not sure, to leave that food out. Introduce one food at a time every 3 to 7 days. Eat it a couple of times on one day and then don't eat it again, and watch yourself for those signs. Yeah, that's all I got. I mean, I could read the rest of chapter 10, but
you should probably save that for the actual book. Cool. Mickey, anything? Oh, we have this question about fermented cod liver oil, butter oil blend. I can say from my perspective, I used to take the butter oil blend when I was having problems, and found that it actually was causing some irritation in my skin rather than helping it. And I switched to just the fermented cod liver oil without the butter oil blend. I like to take it in a shot glass with water, and it worked better for me. I don't know what your experience is, Sarah.
I never took the butter oil blend. I went straight to just fermented cod liver oil.
Yeah.
And I, you know, just like trace gluten can be a huge problem for somebody with celiac disease, if you are sensitive to dairy, trace dairy proteins can be a huge problem. So it's individual whether or not it's going to be a problem for you. But I would say better to err on the side of caution and stick with straight fermented cod liver oil.
So what I would say about this one is that it would be a good time to go back to your doctor and get a full thyroid workup just to make sure that she has enough thyroid hormone, because low T3 can cause a lot of the symptoms that she's talking about that aren't getting resolved. And although while the autoimmune protocol can really help with a lot of symptoms, it can't really make up for the fact that your thyroid can't make enough T3, which, as a hormone that every cell in your body has a receptor for, is pretty gnarly business. So if she's trying to fix her autoimmune disease without needing or wanting to take medication, if that's what's going to make her feel her best and her healthiest, then I would definitely encourage her to check that out, because there are a lot of options that are not traditional pharmaceutical drugs. There's synthetic hormones, there's compounded medication, there's natural desiccated thyroid, and if she finds a good doctor that's willing to do the right tests and try different things in addition to all of this work that she's doing on her gut, she might find that everything together is a good solution.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Mickey. I think that a lot of people get overzealous with their desire to completely manage autoimmune diseases with diet and lifestyle. And for some autoimmune diseases, that's like totally possible to do and easy to do. But when autoimmune diseases attack organs and those organs have a function in the body, sometimes taking medications to support organ function are really important. And of course, Hashimoto's thyroiditis is probably the most classic example of, you know, a time when taking medication to support organ function, it may be something that's required depending on the amount of damage that's been done to the thyroid before making diet and lifestyle changes. It might be something that's always required.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely something that I had to accept for myself in my own journey. I came to the autoimmune protocol expecting to figure it all out just with diet. And I'm really happy that I looked into it and I realized what that effect has on your body being low in a hormone that is just, I mean, it's incredibly important and it's terrible being deficient in it. And I'm glad that I found a doctor who was willing to do the right tests. And I feel like I can credit a lot of my success both to the autoimmune protocol and to being willing to find a medication that works. And, you know, managing stress is another big, big piece as well. So it's not just about the diet.
Yeah. I would wholeheartedly agree. And I feel like, although I don't have a thyroid condition, you know, part of my healing myself was being able to recognize that I don't have a gallbladder that function. I don't, just like someone doesn't have a thyroid that functions properly, I don't have a gallbladder that functions properly because I don't have a gallbladder at all. And so, you know, whereas before I'm like, oh, if I'm not eating properly, I must not be eating properly because then eventually I will learn how to digest foods if I just learn how to eat properly. No, I don't have an organ to do that proper digestion for me. So I had to take a supplement. And once I kind of said to myself, okay, I'm going to take ox bile and I'm going to take HCL and these things are going to help me digest food, and I committed to it, it made a huge difference in my overall health. And just the same way with thyroid function, if your body is not making the proper hormones and has lost that function, or likening it to a type 1 diabetic. You know, you might hear these success stories of people who get to go completely off of insulin after being a type 1 diabetic, or you might hear from someone with a thyroid condition that gets to go completely off their thyroid medication. But, you know, for the majority of people, you should consider it a success if you see improvement while either, you know, maintaining or reducing your medication, rather than, you know, going through a lifetime of perhaps needing to alter it, increase as you get older. You know, if you're able to kind of maintain where you are with healthy nutrition and sleep and stress reduction, which I cannot agree enough that that is really serious and important to healing and health, then that definitely is nothing to be ashamed of or afraid of. You know, the goal here is to nourish and heal your body. And if a supplement or a medication does that for you, as well as all of the other strides that you're making, there's nothing to be ashamed of in that. You know, it's just, we don't want people to take a medication without giving thought to what might be causing a problem in their bodies is all that we're asking of people to kind of think about. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. So, that's a wrap.
Oh, another long one.
Yeah, this is a really long one. But it's been a while since we've had a long one. So, and, I feel like we had some good discussion at the front end. At least I feel like.
I guess you had a question.
Sorry.
It's okay. It was good. It was relevant. It was awesome.
Yeah. So, Mickey, thanks so much for joining us. But beyond just joining us, thanks for creating such an awesome resource for people who were potentially, you know, suffering in their own lives. And I hope that this powerful tool that you've created for them to feel, you know, excited and engaged in this health promoting healing protocol can be found and useful for them the way that, you know, I know that it can be, and I know Sarah knows that it can be, and hopefully we can get the word out there for you about how very useful it is. Is that like four times that I use the word useful? I'm sorry. Can you tell that I'm tired?
You need to go lie down.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the same thing. Well, I'm going to get into my pajamas first.
So, awesome. Well, got anything else, Mickey, you want to add?
Just thanks, guys. I mean, you guys are awesome. I'm very inspired by your work and what you guys do, and the time and the commitment that you put out there to helping people is really amazing. And yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming on. Yeah. And you're doing it yourself. So I don't know what we're doing, Sarah. Sometimes, man.
Yeah. I don't have any answer for that. I'm over my head in it right now. So
cool.
I will have perspective later.
All right. Well, we're all going to get the rest that we tell people to get so that we can practice what we preach, and we'll be back next week, and hopefully we'll be awesome. See everybody later. Right.
Good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Awesome. He is the magic, brilliant filter where everything I say just like comes out sounding all kinds of awesome.
That's right. That's what he does.